The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is Jim Highsmith. You're now listening to the Idle of Friday Evening podcast.
Right. Welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm your host, Colleen Johnson, and this is another part of our new series we're trying out called Member Spotlight. And today our guest is Chris Merman. Welcome, Chris.
Word.
Can you start out by telling our audience a little bit about yourself and how you got into Agile and, you know, what about your background brought you into the Agile world?
So I've been in IT. I haven't been in IT for, I guess, relatively speaking, for, you know, someone who's almost 40. I haven't been in IT that long. I started about maybe 10 years ago, and I'd spent most of my career doing various forms of media. Like, I studied journalism, and I worked in printing and television and radio and advertising. I'd kind of done a lot of those things and just didn't really see where it was anything. It was kind of headed in the right direction. So there was a company that was like, hey, well, you don't need any experience. It's a job in IT and we'll teach you how to do everything. It was basically like a QA farm where they contracted you out to companies. And they taught me some basic, you know, I learned some, you know, basic SQL and Unix stuff and learned testing principles. And I worked a lot in telecommunications a lot, and that was done very waterfall, very old school. I kind of got near to the end of waterfall's popularity amongst big enterprise software, which was interesting. And when I was doing that, they kind of found out when we were in meetings that I was always the one that was kind of translating in between business and engineering. And so they were like, well, Chris is the one that's doing all, like, he's the one that's doing all the translating between, like, he doesn't really need to be doing QA anymore. So I kind of got to try my hand at, like, writing some old school requirements. I didn't get a lot of course, because I wasn't trained in any of that. They just kind of basically threw me a bunch of HLDs and said, translate them. And that was an awful learning experience. And, so when I left that gig for my final QA job, I was a contractor out at Rackspace, and they had just started their Agile transformation. This was, you know, 6 years ago. And they, I met a couple of people that, introduced me. I showed up for a meeting. I thought it was just like a weekly status meeting, like it was anything else. And he said, he was kind of new to the project, and he said, so we're going to do something called a scrum of scrums. And I was like, I stopped him. I said, first off, I don't know what a first scrum is. So why is it? Why are you using that word twice when I don't know what the first one means? And he kind of laughed and said, I'll explain it later. And you know, everybody started going around the room and gave these long status updates. And he was like, you know, I don't know if you guys know, but like, you don't really do that in a scrum of scrums. And again, I stopped him. I said, you need to tell us what this is if we're going to do it. So he noticed that since I was eager and I was asking a bunch of questions, he kind of pulled me aside and explained some basics of scrum. And when I realized that my contract ended and it didn't really work out there, he said, hey, I got someone I want you to meet. And so he introduced me to someone in Dallas that, was doing a mobile startup and, needed someone to kind of run a scrum team. And so that was, and when I met the person that was running this, she said, I want you, here's a bunch of books. I want you to read these all before you start. I need you to know all these things. And so I basically just started, she kind of made me a scrum master kind of from day one. And I showed up knowing, not knowing what to do. And I'm kind of a long way to explain. Like I did it like the way all of us did. I just kind of backed my way into it and I lied and said, yeah, I could do this. Not a thing about what I was doing. And, here I am now leading hordes of agile teams for the ages.
Well, and it sounds like, from what you're saying about your journalism background, there's an obvious dotted line from that experience to, writing user stories and helping to translate business requirements for the engineering teams. Are there other things about your journalism background that you think help you in the world of Agile?
It's funny you asked that. I wrote recently a tangential point to this that I think my journalism professors, without knowing a thing what I'd be doing, if I told them what I was doing, they would probably still be proud of me, because most of what I do involves showing up with a notebook and a pen, which I still carry a notebook and pen everywhere I go in my pocket. And I basically just sit down and ask questions. And the skills that I learned about listening, which I still am trying to learn how to be a good listener, but, listening and receiving information well, validating that information. Those are all skills that I didn't know I was learning, and yet I use them every day. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. So much of what we do is facilitating conversation and asking questions.
It's so funny that we think we're the ones that are delivering this knowledge, and we're really not. I mean, we can reframe things. We can be, there's all the cliches about being a mirror and everything, but I mean, really in the end, we just have to listen and reflect back what we hear and hope that when we say it, they go, oh, that's my problem.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Agile Uprising. How did you hear about Agile Uprising Coalition and what got you to sign in and participate with the community?
Well, this is going to sound very kiss up-ish, but you and I are Twitter friends, and I think I saw it. About it. And I mean, if you ask me this question to give you like a pat on the back, then I can. I mean, you're Colleen's a great Twitter follow, everybody. So, follow her and awesomeness happens. Now I think in our industry, we're kind of at peak, coming out with agile products, website kind of a thing in our industry. I kind of see sites pop up a lot or blogs pop up. Like for instance, someone, in the fall, they came out with like a confession corner, which is it's secret, but for agile, where it's like, where people just show up and be like, I ran a standup today and it was just like a status meeting. It was, but it was complete, like rando stuff like that that you see all the time. But
whiteboard confessions.
Yeah, exactly. So when I see people share a new product or link or whatnot, I'm always a little wary, because I'm like, oh, is this just part of, some sort of consultancy or some product you're trying to sell or, but the name kind of struck me as like an uprising. And I thought, okay, well, let's see what this is about. And it almost became immediately clear that like, this is a site that's trying to change the conversation, because so often, LinkedIn, which has its pluses, as well as minuses, like it often in the agile space, it just turns into a nerd off and people just kind of yell each other about how wrong they are, and which is just the same as we're doing in the world today with everything else. So it's just, it's like the agile conversation reflects what's going on with, as you and I have discussed many times, the awful things that are happening in our country today. But so rather than that, it almost seemed like the coalition site was trying to like uprise the level of communication up, like, hey, let's go deeper. Let's go a level deeper instead of, Scrum versus Kanban or, where do you put the blocked column in your board kind of a thing. Like, rather than doing all those things, like, let's really talk to the heart of why we lead our teams in the ways we do and why why we struggle with the things that we do. How do you, like, I've seen a lot of conversation recently about how do we measure things? How do we learn in a different way? And I think that I would like to think that raises our industry up, like all, you know, that whole rising tide and boats shit, whatever comment, you know, hopefully we're doing that on the site. And I think that's why I'm participating regularly.
Yeah, no, that's definitely the goal of the Uprising Coalition. And I would echo, that's what drew me to it as well. I think there tends to be a lot of soapboxy back and forth through Twitter and LinkedIn, like you mentioned. And I feel like there's been some really cool and very humbling questions posted or feedback on, you know, I've seen people ask for feedback on conference submissions or activities that they're about to try out with their teams for the first time. And there's all different ranges of experience in Agile on there. So I'm really enjoying the type of conversation that's coming out of it as well. Are there, oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you, I'm interviewing you now. Like, do you think that like some of it is the attitude in which of the people that approach the site, as opposed to, like, for instance, I always wonder, am I trying to show that I'm smarter than you, or am I really trying to like connect with you and learn? And so, like, do you feel like that the site portrays the right attitude, and that's why the conversation's a little more mature?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, even if you think about just the structure of how you post on there and how it threads the conversations together, it's almost leveling that back and forth a little bit more than something like LinkedIn, right? Where you're broadcasting, it's kind of a one-sided broadcast of here's my opinion, and you can have a short rebuttal back, and we can start a comments war if you don't like it. But I do think that it, you know, the way the Uprising site is structured really is, it's kind of making a more collaborative conversation just through the nature of the way it's threaded.
Hopefully. I mean, like, again, that's what, I mean, hopefully we can keep ourselves in check as well. If we ever get too full of ourselves, then we'll also kind of do some polite mocking and say, get back in line.
I'll mock you anyway. So
I know.
Are there any interactions with people on the site that you feel like you wouldn't have had normally? Or are you seeing things on the site that you feel like you wouldn't have found anywhere else?
So I feel like there's, I mean, with any site where it's kind of message boardy-ish, I feel like there's the power users, right? Like you can see, you know, you can see Bacon on there a lot. You can see Andy Clef on there a lot. Of course you'll see, you know, James and Ryan on there as well, kind of regularly. But I think of the people that are on there regularly, I think that the interactions, again, like a lot of the time we're all consultants in a way. I mean, even if we're FTEs and we're on a consultant, you know, we're still kind of internal consultants to a degree when we're leading Agile teams. And the challenge with a consultant mentality is that you're always trying, like, it's easy to think like I need to prove that I know what I'm doing, because I never know what I'm talking to a potential client, or I'm trying to, you know, I'm being tested, and that turns it into a competition. And I feel like Andy Bagan, someone I hadn't really interacted with a lot. I mean, most of these people I also interact with on Twitter, but on the site, I kind of saw like a level of thoughtfulness with his kind of post that I wouldn't have normally, I wouldn't normally see on Twitter. And I guess that's why I feel like the site hopefully can, augment some of the Twitter piece. Cause again, we're broadcasting things on Twitter. We're sharing links of things that interest us. We're sharing our own material, and, which I like that the Uprising Coalition is not about like, look, I wrote this cool thing, like give me some links and share it out. Like that's not what the site's for, but it is for providing thoughtful feedback of where did I get it wrong. It's almost like a good way to think about it is it's almost like the comment section to my blog without me needing to have the comment section on my blog. Cause I can just share it there and go, hey guys, what did I do wrong? Like, where's the gaps in my logic? What am I not seeing here? And And you'll see that.
Yeah. Let's take a minute to talk about your blog. So your blog is chrismerman.com. Will you share about what you typically write about or where you get your inspiration and ideas for your posts?
Sure. So first off, I suck at naming things. And so I see a lot of people with like cute Twitter handles or blog like sites that have the word agile in it and whatnot. And I already had my Twitter account before I got into agile anyways. And so, I just thought it's my name. My name is who I am. And that way also, if I decide to write about something different, like, which is really what happened. When I went to the mobile startup, I read a Seth Godin post about, you know, nobody's going to know you're an expert on something until you tell them you are. And so I thought, well, I've always been interested in mobile technology. I spent 4 years building mobile apps. And so I know a ton about them, and I really wanted to write about it. And so, as I was trying to find my voice, it had been a while since I had written regularly. I started writing about mobile. And then when I started exploring some of the agile space, it was like, it almost seemed like it was a meeting of the minds in terms of mobile is such a fast moving piece of software that it almost seemed to match what agile was trying to do in terms of not fast in terms of moving too fast, to quote one of my conference submissions, but more just like, let's move it at a faster speed than our competitors. And so, I just decided to turn the post into like, this is where mobile technology and agile methodology meets. But the more I wrote, the more I went in my career, the less I started writing about mobile and the more I wrote about agile, and specifically like when you introduce agile into teams, like how do they change? So I'm very interested in change in teams when they go through this process. And I hate using the word transformation. Because like it makes it sound something bigger than it really is. Like we're just going to be changing. Right. So I just, when I see things like, oh, that, like I get inspiration from the weirdest things. I mean, it could be like from a TED talk and it kind of connects with me, like something I see on a team. Sometimes like it's a conversation with a coworker that or a fellow consultant on their project. I try not to write about teams that I'm currently on or clients that I'm currently with, because then they're kind of like checking my blog, be like, what they say about me this week kind of a thing. So I try to write about other things or past experiences, which can sometimes mean I have to like keep regular notes and journal a lot, which I do professionally. But really it's just kind of, when we do this thing that we're doing about making cool shit in this way that is hopefully different than the way that we used to make it, like what happens? So I'm fascinated with that. And I hopefully put forward stories in a thoughtful manner.
Yeah. It's almost like the psychology of change. I feel like I've seen through some of your writing.
Oh, what's crazy is, I don't know if you've read any behavioral economics, but I used to think that economics was just like money and finance and what does it do to the economy. And then like, you know, Michael Lewis wrote Moneyball, and it was like, well, then there here's economics in sports. Like what else could it be applied to? And then you notice a lot of behavioral economics comes out with like Daniel Pink, what he writes with, or Kahneman, and his partner that his name's blanking on me. Anything that involves like the economy of the economy of the mind, what happens to us? Like when we do things, like what happens when we get stuck? What happens when we get unstuck? What makes an idea stick? So any of those ideas, like I am down.
Yeah, you've got some, I think I've never heard of any of the behavioral economics stuff, but I can see just through what you're talking about, that overlap. And I'll definitely drop a shameless plug here for the Mile High Agile Conference this May. We've actually added a whole track around organizational change and culture. And it's been really cool because it's brought in a lot of new submissions this year from people with more psychology backgrounds talking about some of those concepts you just mentioned. And I'm excited to have that element at an Agile conference. It's not really something I've seen, seen those two worlds intersect, but they definitely do.
So what are the, like, in your mind, like, what are organizational change, like, what are the subject areas that you see are under organizational change?
We're seeing a lot about, is it possible to change culture, or are you changing around the culture? We've seen some things about just the way that we can resist change and why. I've seen some interesting posts and submissions around your brain, the way your brain responds to change. Mm-hmm. And I think that stuff's fascinating, but from the conference perspective, we haven't selected the speakers quite yet. So I can't 100% tell you who will be presenting for that track, but a lot of it has been more like I said, on the psychology of change.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it'll be great. Well, what do you think? You mentioned that you hate the word transformation. What do you think is the biggest barrier to agility in big organizations that are trying to do quote unquote transformation projects?
So I thought long and hard about this question. Thank you for sending me this question in advance, because I wanted to be thoughtful in the answer. And I'm going to potentially piss off some of our colleagues when I say this, but I honestly feel that the maturity of agile coaching and what a quote unquote coaching consulting practice is like, I know there are some amazing coaches out there. I mean, I'm one, even though I'm not always staffed at one on projects now. I feel like the idea of agile as a product is probably one of the biggest threats that we have in our community. And I say that because, one of the biggest cliches is you don't do agile, you have to be agile. But the problem is that we say that we hate that phrase but in a way, if I am an independent consultant and I say, and someone's like, hey, come coach our company, you are making Agile a product. Like you are going there to do the Agile thing. Now you may say, well, I'm being Agile. And so by being Agile in front of them, then I will help them understand how to be Agile. But really, you're just introducing new activities for them to do. They're not going to change their mindset day one. So what are you really giving them? Like, unless you have a client that is really willing to invest like long-term, like spend 6, 12, 18 months to really see growth amongst teams and change amongst teams happen. Like, you're just going to show up and you're going to do a Scrum Master class, or you're going to do a product owner class. And I'm all for those trainings. Like I like your training, Colleen, that you do about lean Kanban and lean experimentation, like all those games, like you can teach skills in and of themselves, and that can be a good thing. But to say, I'm going to go teach them how to be agile is really just something that you're masking as a way to make agile a product. And really, agile is just a byproduct of us making cool stuff in a new way. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it is. I mean, I think it's hard. I think the let's be agile and not do agile is almost more of what you hope the company is, what I would hope any company we're going into coach. I would hope that's more their position of understanding that we might bring them practices and processes and teach them those, different ceremonies or facilitation techniques, but I think from their end, there's a cultural shift that they have to be open to make all of it work. So it's almost like coming at it from two different angles. We'll bring the doing agile. You bring the being agile. We'll meet in the middle.
So a good friend of mine, I think you know her, Allison Pollard, taught me this phrase of we have to meet customers where they are, meet our clients where they are. And how that manifests itself is like most of the clients that we sit down with, I know the ones that I sit down with, they all got to where they are making at the time what they thought were very rational decisions based on their organizational constraints, their financial constraints, their people constraints, their technological constraints. Like they make all these decisions that are the best ones they can make at the time. And then a consultant shows up 5 years, 10 years, whatever later. And it's like, oh my God, you guys were doing it all wrong. Well, they were doing the best they could. And it doesn't give, like, we don't give any clients we don't give our clients the empathy or the grace, if you will, for lack of a better way to put it, to say, like, hey, like, you know, you realize that's not the best way to do things now, but you were okay at the time. So like, what can we keep? There's always something you can keep. You don't just trash everything and start from scratch. You're going to have a mutiny on your hands, or the minute as a consultant you walk out the door, they're going to go right back to the way they were doing things. So you keep some of the things and you move the board a little bit. You help them down the journey a little bit. And if you're not the consultant that helps them, then maybe the next consultant will. And you just hope that you can do the best that you can with the time that you have and hope that's enough.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I think that whole concept too of meet a company where they are. Going back to what we were talking about with the psychology of change, a company is going to be a lot more welcoming to that approach than, like you said, we're going to strip everything out and tell you you've been doing it wrong this whole time. What do you think the biggest threat or opportunity is that we as an agile community face today?
I mean, if we lose our sense of humor about ourselves, my favorite thing about conferences is, people show up with, like when you and I were in Atlanta this year, there were people with great attitudes and there were tons of people there that weren't taking themselves too seriously. You know, there were tons of people that were saying like, hey, I know that in the previous interview podcast, crud, I forgot his name.
Tanner.
Yes, Tanner. Yeah. He made a comment. He made a comment to Mike Cohn's famous Mile High keynote where he talked about maybe I could be wrong. I wasn't there, but I watched the video of it, and it affected Mike's who I got both my Scrum Master and Product Owner cert from. So I have a particular affinity for Cohn. And I feel like even though he said that like a couple of years ago, we're still not getting it. We still think we're not wrong. And I think if we can stop viewing, again, tying it to about agile organizations, if we can stop agile as a product and we can say, hey, I might be wrong, and stop trying to put things, I mean, stuff doesn't have to fit into like, you know, lean versus Kanban versus scale, like, and this whole like ridiculous scaling conversation about whether you scale or not. Like, I mean, I got my own opinions on this stuff, but like, who cares what I think? Like, I don't think anybody really cares about what my opinion is. When most of the time when we say, well, what do you think about this? You're really just waiting for your opportunity to say, well, I think you're wrong and here's what I think, or this is what I think. Aren't I right? And that's just an awful attitude. I'm not calling anybody in particular out because I'm guilty of this from time to time. I constantly have to challenge myself like, hey, could I be wrong about this? Hopefully I'm surrounding myself with other agilists that are challenging my notions and beliefs and ideas, because I'm going to be wrong a lot. So if we don't quit that, like, we're just going to get laughed at of companies, you know, in like 5-10 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah, And there's a great podcast. There's a podcast off the Uprising, Agile Uprising podcast series about meta frameworks. And there's kind of a running joke among us that my framework's better than your framework, because there's definitely an attitude right now of, that argumentative stance in which one do you adhere to or align with? And like you mentioned at the beginning of this conversation, I mean, unfortunately, that seems to be very prevalent in everything around us right now, not just Agile frameworks.
Right. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, like when someone says sit down, like the client I'm at right now, they sat down and they said, we'd love to know your take on it. Like, what is Agile? And when I sat down and I gave them principles, I stripped out all the branded terminology, right? Like I use the term, and instead of sprint, I use iteration. I try not to say daily scrum. You know, stand-ups are more of a ubiquitous term across frameworks. I taught some lean enterprise, taught some lean principles, some lean enterprise principles, some Kanban principles of, you know, WIP and cycle time being the best measurement, about how scrum of scrums are the best way to, like, you know, share information across teams as opposed to, you know, weekly status meeting. Like, so I take pieces of everything, and we should all do that. And if you disagree with the way that I do it, that's okay, because you're probably doing it just fine as well. We're all relatively intelligent people. At least I'm hopefully I am. And if we're piecing together what works for us or what we can teach best that makes sense, then that works.
Definitely. I like that approach a lot. All right. Well, I'm going to move into our lightning round here.
That's good. So I can talk even faster now.
I'll have to time box each one of these. all right. First one. What is your favorite Agile term?
So I honestly don't know if I have a favorite one. I think that lowercase agile is my favorite agile term. Uppercase agile.
How about your least favorite, or what's the agile term you'd like to ban from the community?
Sprint. It sends the wrong message. It's such an awful term. It's the only word in the Scrum Guide that I completely disagree with. A lot of my clients use Jira, and it's like when you start a new iteration, it calls it a sprint, and I'm like, can I get with the Atlassian people and just say, can you please take that word out? Because it makes them think like we have to go faster than you really do.
That's funny. One of my very first client I ever worked with, had me take the term sprint out of all my training materials and change it to iteration for the same reason. It's interesting. All right. If you had one piece of advice to give to somebody that's brand new to Agile, what would it be?
Focus on delivery. I'm a consultant at ThoughtWorks, and there's a phrase that we use a lot that we believe in: transformation through delivery. So often when we're getting started with clients, we just think, I need to, like, are we doing it the right way? And this isn't agile. And like, when we really should just focus on the phrase that I pound in all my clients' head is like, shipping cures everything. So if you, regardless of whether this way of working is painful or awful or fun or whatever, like if you're shipping work, like you'll be good. So just focus on delivery and then you'll figure out the rest as you go.
I like that too. All right. This is your, oh no, I've got two more. What's your favorite city for an Agile conference?
So I struggle with this because most of the time when I go to a conference, I go straight to the hotel where they're most likely having the conference. And I go straight there and I stay there until I leave the conference and I don't leave. So I'm going to default to Austin because when they do Keep Austin Agile, they do it downtown. And they try to do some things, not just at the Marriott Hotel where they're having the conference, but some surrounding areas as well. Plus downtown Austin's like just cool to walk around in.
Definitely. And if you could have a cup of coffee with any person, dead or alive, who would it be?
Well, I'm going to give you a dead and an alive one. Cause I don't know. I've never, my, speaking of what's going on in the world today, my great grandparents, they came over on the boat from Germany in the early 1900s. And I never met them, or I supposedly met my great-grandparents. Did I say my grandparents? I meant my great-grandparents. My grandfather was the first one born in this country, and I never got to meet my great-grandparents. And I would just love to know, like, what was it like coming over? Like, what was it like immigrating into this country? Hoping that it would shed a light on this awful situation that's going on in our world today. And stop the Muslim ban. There's my plug. Stop. No Muslim ban. There. Go away.
And how about alive?
Oh, Chuck Klosterman. He's one of my favorite. He writes about all kinds of weird crap. He started out as a music reviewer for like Rolling Stone and things like that. And now he just writes on a ton of pop culture stuff. He's super weird and quirky. He's friends with Bill Simmons. He's like all over the place, and he's very like manic when he talks. He has to like roll his sleeves up, and he just waves his hands a lot, and he talks even faster than I do. It's just, he's nuts. I love him.
Be hard to get a word in between the two of you is what you're saying.
You do just fine, Colleen.
That's true. All right, Chris, is there anything you want to plug in terms of upcoming speaking engagements or anywhere you're going to be where people could meet you or interact with you or your blog?
How fast is this going to post? I meant to ask you that.
Pretty fast, I think. So, okay. Plug away.
So this weekend, February 11th, no, that's next weekend. Next weekend, February 11th, I'm going to be in Houston at the Keep Houston Agile Conference. And then in May, I think, you and I and some of our other fellow coalition friends will be at, Agile and Beyond. I'm going to get to do a brand new topic on brain writing. It's kind of a different take on brainstorming. So we'll see how that goes. That's all I've got planned for this year right now. I'm sure more conferences will come up. Hopefully I'm doing Mile High Agile. You know, no, hint, hint, wink, wink.
I take bribes.
So anyway, we'll see. I'll follow me on Twitter at Chris Merman, same as CHRISMURMAN, and I get 5 stars all the time.
Thank you so much for participating today, Chris, and be sure to check out Chris's blog also at chrismerman.com, and if you're not already a member of the Agile Uprising, you can join us at agileuprising.com. All right, thanks again, Chris.
Love you, Colleen.
Talk to you guys all soon.